Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning to all the Troblazon tribes in quadrant 24Z Bravo Charlie. Good morning to the riverboat captains, captaining those boats up and down the Mississippi. Can you believe it, Mark Twain? Good morning to the mountaineers climbing those peaks just like they did in the olden days, looking for that snow crossing, that special bliss where the Yeti screams and the night terrors screech at your back. It is October the 25th, 2023, and it's your good friend Dan at around 6:46 a.m. here in Greenkentown, Washington, on the Olympic Peninsula. Are you ready? Can you hear the white noise? That's a heater I cannot turn off. Can you hear the white noise? It covers up the screams. It covers up the problems. It makes you stop thinking about the smoke. Can you hear the white noise? You don't have to know. You don't have to be, baby. So if you've been listening to my podcast recently, you know that I have been working as a tutor and a mentor for like algebra and English and history, and am I making millions of dollars? Well, gee, I'm living in a camper, so why don't you figure that out, shithead? But, you know, in many ways, it's better than what I was doing as a programmer or software engineer or a code monkey, whatever term of art you choose, an electronic computer janitor that would get hired by, like, the Puzzle Palace at Willy Wonka's in Redmond to fix broken shit, to keep broken shit running. So yeah, it's better than that. But the money was better working at Willy Wonka's. I gotta admit to that. But still, here I am. And if you can hear that noise in the background, that's a heater. I'd love to be able to turn it off, but like all things related to the government, there is no obvious way to turn it off. All you can hope for is it breaks down on its own. Damn, that's not... Oh, shut up, Mr. Scrumbo. One of the questions I put on the chalkboard recently for students who are studying different books like The Great Gatsby or The Absolutely True Story of a Part-Time Indian or The Crucible or Frankenstein was the basic kind of question I put on the board was, is a secret the same as a lie? And it seems like a dumb question. It's not really. It's not designed for adults who've been through this life a little bit, who've been on the planet a couple decades. It's really designed for teenagers approaching literature and saying to themselves, what are the themes? And this isn't a major theme of any of these stories, but it's a minor theme. This idea of living a double life, this idea of keeping multiple worlds connected and you're the connector. And it's not always very stark or sinister. In the case of Junior from The Absolutely True Story of a Part-Time Indian, he's not really keeping the double life a secret, but he has to live it. And at first, there are secrets. At first, there are things he doesn't want to talk about. For example, that he has no money, that he's poor. And the reason why is because he starts going to a high school that's off the reservation, Reardon. And so he has to keep those things At first, he feels he has to keep those things secret. Later, he learns that he doesn't have to, and in the process, he builds trust with people he didn't know he could build trust with. In the case of our friendly man, Dr. Victor Frankenstein, his double life is the monster. Because if you've read Frankenstein relatively early in the book, you know, relatively early in the first third, he creates the monster. He's horrified by the monster. I can't believe I took the spare parts of a dozen people, sewed them together, threw in some metal shavings and some, sawdust and sand and diesel fuel. And like Dr. Grunk has told me, you know, but gee, I created a fucking monster. How could that happen? And for Dr. Victor Frankenstein, or Victor Frankenstein, I don't know if they ever gave him his doctorate. For Victor Frankenstein, the monster in many ways is his double life, and it's also his secret. It's his shame. You know, it's one of those questions you have to ask yourself if you're going to go down the road to create life, and this is a valid question for people who want to be parents. What is your responsibility? I know we live in an age where people want to foist their responsibilities onto some collective good and pretend that it takes a village, but here's the deal. At the end of the day, the person that takes care of your kid is you. Even if it means taking advantage of a community school, even if it means forming packs and forming friendships with, you know, other parents in your neighborhood to do a co-op school, it's still the responsibility of the person, the parent, for that child. And it's funny because Victor Frankenstein in a lot of ways represents people today. It's like, oh, I had a kid, I wasn't happy with it. So maybe I'll run off and pretend it doesn't exist. Secrets. Secrets and lies. In the case of The Crucible, one of the underlying stories is a story between Abigail and one of the other main characters, you know, Proctor, and you get this idea that, you know, the whole thing might not have happened if they'd simply been honest about having an affair. But back in the day, right, with the Puritans, if you admit to having sex and you're married, that's pretty bad. But you know what's worse, Abigail, than having sex with a married man? Rigging up a psyop that kills all your friends, or most of them, that kills a lot of women, that kills a few men. Would you like another rock, buddy? We'll put it on your chest. It'll be the best if you just tell us you're a witch. Secrets and lies and double lives. And it seems like a dumb question maybe to some of you, but I think it's a critical question. At what point do you tell people something you're afraid to tell them? Sometimes it may seem big to you. It might not be that big. But anyways, I'm going to move on to the next topic because right am I saying, let's go, let's go. Here's an article from Life News I'm about to read. Headline, doctors euthanized 16-year-old girl with brain tumor so they could harvest her organs. This was written by Wesley Smith and published on October the 23rd, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. And I read on. The shortage of organs for transplantation is threatening to unleash immoral and unethical remedies. A terrible story out of Belgium illustrates the peril. A 16-year-old girl with a brain tumor asked to be euthanized and have her organs harvested. 16. Doctors agreed. She was sedated and intubated in an ICU for 36 hours so that her organs could be quote-unquote examined, which probably meant imaging and blood tests, She was then euthanized and her organs procured. 3 points. First, this was a minor, a kid, terrified of decline, who stated that by donating organs, she believed she could do some good. But except for that option, she might not have made that decision. Second, as far as we know, the girl wasn't provided suicide prevention services, nor assured that palliative care, which means, you know, pain care, could alleviate her symptoms. Third, the lengthy sedation and intubation to which she was subjected were not for her benefit, but to allow her organs to be tested and find compatible recipients. In other words, at least in some sense, once the girl asked to donate her organs, her body parts became more important than her life. Conjoining euthanasia with organ harvesting is a growing phenomenon in Belgium and the Netherlands. These countries don't require that the patient donor be terminally ill. Indeed, in both, the mentally ill qualify for medicalized killing. That means if you're a depressed baby, you can donate your organs. Meaning that people who would not die for many years are euthanized in hospitals and then stripped of their parts. My words. Our closest cultural cousins in Canada, your words, not mine, which legalized euthanasia in 2016, have traveled even further down the same utilitarian highway. If an Ontarian patient is accepted to receive a lethal injection, and again, that person need not be terminally ill, and starting next year, maybe just mentally ill, the organization that oversees organ donation, Trillium, that's a great name, must be informed so that its representative can contact the soon-to-be-dead person and ask for his or her liver, kidneys, pancreas, lungs, and heart. Great. It's worth noting that such patients aren't referred to mental health professionals to deter their suicides. The clear message this policy thus sends to suicidal, ill, and disabled Canadians, with the active support of the organ transplant community, is that their deaths have greater value to Canada than their lives. The abandonment has become so crass that euthanasia has been described in Canadian media as a boon to organ donation. The danger of killing for organs isn't restricted to countries where euthanasia is legal. I gotta drink a little water here. Currently, efforts are underway by the Uniform Law Commission to redefine brain death, possibly toward allowing more organs to be procured than under current procedures. Ho. Whether brain death is truly death is a subject for a different column. This redefining process engaged in has broken down for now. But that impasse shouldn't allow us to rest easy. The internationally influential Princeton utilitarian philosopher and bioethicist Peter Singer has just written a column published throughout the world advocating that donors should not have to be biologically deceased to be harvested. Wow. Indeed, Mr. Singer advocates for killing for organs. When it is justifiable to end a human life? When is it justifiable to end a human life, he asks. His answer? What determines whether it is justifiable to regard the life of a person as having ended is the irrevocable loss of consciousness, like if you get really drunk. Once that has occurred, the person can be taken to a hotel and put into a bathtub with lots of ice, and some dude can come along and take out the kidneys and leave a note. Why don't you call 911, baby? Yeah, those are my words, but this is so atrocious. But such people aren't cadavers. They're patients. That's that's both basic biology and fundamental to medical ethics. Mr. Singer and many other bioethicists who have similarly opined would unscientifically redefine death from a biological state of non-being into a sociological status of lesser value, equivalent to as good as dead. Like if you're living in a camper, like your good friend Dan. Thereby dehumanizing unquestionably living people. Even more perilously, his proposal would establish in law the pernicious principle that there's such a thing as a life not worth living. History amply tells us the acute dangers of such thinking. Besides, it's not as if we can ever know for sure who is beyond consciousness. Stories of seemingly unaware patients waking up unexpectedly are ubiquitous. Moreover, people thought to be unconscious are often awake and aware, but unable to communicate. Indeed, recent studies show that perhaps 20% of people thought to be unconscious are actually awake. As the examinations of this phenomenon progress and cognition tests become more sophisticated, that percentage could grow. Meaning that even if one accepts Mr. Singer's toxic prescription, people who wouldn't qualify for killing and harvesting could be subjected to an awful fate. And it wouldn't stop there. Once we establish the principle that some living people can be killed for their organs, the harvestable categories would surely expand over time. We need only look at the history of the assisted suicide euthanasia movement to see how that process works. Euthanasia/assisted suicide, we were told, would be strictly limited to the dying. But over time, the categories expanded in some places well beyond the terminally ill. And even in the U.S. states that still have such a limitation, laws have been loosened to make an increasing number of people eligible to be made dead. Finally, we can't discuss killing for organs without noting the crimes against humanity ongoing in China, where Falun Gong practitioners and other political prisoners are harvested to supply the country's pernicious black market in human organs. The West may never go that far, but dehumanizing patients so that we can obtain their organs would expose the devalued to a similarly deadly dehumanization. Here's the bottom line. The public's faith in transplant medicine depends on maintaining the highest ethical standards. I can't think of a surer way to undermine that support than to permit killing for organs. Because if people ever believe that the transplant community supports procuring vital organs from the living, the entire sector could face a collapse in public confidence, meaning that there would not be more organs available for transplant, but fewer. That would be a catastrophe from which the sector would never recover. So we've talked about assisted suicide and euthanasia in previous podcasts, and you all know my view on this. I am unapologetically an anarchist. I don't believe the government helps you at all. I know that you believe you can vote next year and make things better. Good luck with that. But I do think that there is a great danger, and we can all agree upon it, in the government being involved on any level in the issues of life or death. There's a huge danger. And as far as doctors go, if you're going to, well, Dan, doctors, Mr. Scrumbo, doctors, Dan, doctors have principles. Do they, Mr. Scrumbo, do they? I lived through 2020. I worked around hospitals for many years. Some doctors have principles. Some are like Hannibal Lecter. He had principles, right? Didn't Hannibal Lecter have principles, right? So yeah, it's hard for me to sort of put this in a bottle in a way because it's so absurd. If someone had told me when I was in college, you know, 30 years ago, that this was going to be something that would happen, I would have said that seems absurd, but if that's true, then that means a very dark future is ahead. And I look at the world today, and people are telling me, Dan, things are so great and so wonderful. You can get a brand new heart and a brand new kidney and a brand new this. Just ignore the tattoos. Just ignore the tattoos. Dan, they don't tattoo organs. Not yet. Yeah. I think about this. And a couple questions come to mind. Number one is, how big of an issue is this in Canada right now? I don't have any friends in Canada who can either validate or invalidate this issue. That's one part of the problem for me. The other part is, how is it the human race got to the point where we started seeing our neighbors as disposable? And then I go back to Bultima, Harry Bultima, in Maranatha, when he talks about why Sodom was destroyed. And people, well, Dan, it's because people were having butt sex. No, actually, shithead, that's not why. That's not why Bultima said Sodom was destroyed. Sodom was destroyed because neighbors hardened their hearts to their neighbors. Because neighbors spat on the homeless. Because neighbors talked about putting people on islands like McNeil Island. And, you know, maybe you can put 20 or 30,000 homeless on McNeil Island, and maybe they survive, and maybe they don't. That's the world we're at right now. Do you think it's going to get better from here? I mean, the only improvement upon the situation would be economic collapse, because we are at the point where we are proposing ideas that are so fundamentally inhumane that I can't imagine an end state that is beautiful or wonderful or utopian in any sort of absurdly bizarre hallucination. I imagine the last human 200 years from now living in a metal box, like I've said before, and screaming, kill me. That's the direction we're headed in if the system doesn't collapse. That's your slow burn. That's your, what is it, the infinite gray nothing? That's your wonderful future. But if we're lucky, none of that happens. And I say if we're lucky, because the other scenario, which I think is way more likely, is that this shit show is about to unravel. And if you're an atheist, well, then great. This shit show is about to unravel. And if you're a Christian, you should understand that there is no condition under which sacrificing a young life, even though we might consider that life garbage, there's not a condition under which that's okay. There's no condition under which accepting the opinion of a 16-year-old to say, hey, go ahead and take my kidneys is okay. And if you research the organ transplant issue, you'll find out something. That even in the ideal scenarios, the quote-unquote black and white scenarios, there's evidence that people undergo a kind of torture, that there's pain involved. You can't just give people massive drugs. Did you know that? Did you know to make sure? This is the thing. They talk about sedation. Did you know that there is not a scenario where they can give you tons of fentanyl and tons of heroin and tons of painkillers? They'll give you some sedation. They'll knock you out. But perhaps in your unconscious state, you'll see every single one of your organs removed. And those are ideal scenarios, the ones that are black and white. What do you think it was like for that 16-year-old kid? Do you think there was a moment in those hours of being chopped up where the kid might have thought this was a mistake? If you want to tell me about voting and about the future and about what Jerome Powell said and this, oh, I listened to a guy on Fox News or CNN News and they tell, shut the fuck up. It's going to be legal soon to commit suicide in Canada because you're depressed, because you see your life as not economically viable. So tell me again about your rule of law. Tell me again after 2020 about your ethical doctors. Please, I'd love to listen. I'll get really drunk and then unconscious, and you can take me to the Motel 6. And there at the Motel 6, you can pull out your modeling knives and your vodka and all your basic toolage, to include your dirty cooler you put the salmon into. And you can chop out my kidneys and leave a note saying, "Dan, you better call 911. Somebody took your kidneys. You're no longer viable. You're a craphead. You live in a camper." That is where we're at. I've talked about this before, so I'm going to move on to the next topic. But no matter how you interpret this story, even if you think, "Well, Dan, that's just far-right conservatives who are anti-abortion," this is a 16-year-old kid. I have been reading stories about disabled people in Canada basically being told by their doctors, almost being pushed by their doctors, to the great option of assisted suicide. And it doesn't take a lot. For example, what if you have a very depressed, mentally disabled person? What happens to them? How many conversations do they have to have with a doctor about how worthless their life is and how they're not going to do nothing and there's no point? But if they gave up their kidneys and their heart and maybe a lung or two and an eyeball, and who knows, maybe they'll be able to transplant arms and legs soon, right, Dr. Nick Riviera? Imagine a mentally disabled person approaching the system in Canada. And then ask yourself, who, other than Jesus, is looking out for that person? Who? Next topic. Dan, why do you have to... Well, the next topic's better. Here's an article from the New York Post. It's social media related. Can you hear the heater in the background? I'm sorry about that. I live in a camper. You can have my kidneys. Let's move on. Yeah. Headline: I asked my coworker if I could drink her breast milk. Yes, I asked my coworker if I could drink her breast milk. This was written by Dominique Baroust, and it was published on the New York Post on October the 24th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. I read on. A recent post on the "Am I the Asshole" thread caught users of the app's attention. The post, titled "AITA for Asking My Coworker What Would Happen If I Drank Her Breast Milk," tells a tale of a bizarre workplace exchange that quickly escalated into a heated debate. The original poster begins the story with their colleague, Kate, sharing her breastfeeding experiences in the team break room. Good job, Kate. The original poster found themselves intrigued by the topic and asked a peculiar question. "Hey, what would happen if I drank your booby milk?" Taken aback, Kate replied, "Excuse me? You know, Kate, you were talking about your booby milk. I think that's on you too, okay?" The original poster attempted to clarify their curious question, explaining, "I mean, is it okay because your baby is related to you, but I'd get sick because I don't have your same bacteria?" Clearly you skip biology, Mr. Man. The confusion in the room grew as another coworker, Lauren, said, "Well, it can't be that that's how it works, because then wet nurses wouldn't have been a thing." Good job, Lauren. Uncomfortable with the situation, Kate eventually left, accusing the duo of making fun of her. The Reddit post generated nearly 5,000 responses, with opinions divided on whether the original poster was indeed in the wrong. Some Reddit users felt the question was invasive and inappropriate. One user commented, "Look, some thoughts just don't need to be shared with others. Like, for example, euthanizing 16-year-olds is a good idea. Is that a good example, Reddit user?" Another criticized the approach, stating, "That is such a weird and intrusive question." However, as one user shared, "Not everyone found fault. I breastfed two babies and personally would not have been offended by this. While the original phrasing of the question was undeniably clumsy, like removing the kidneys from some dude in a hotel bathtub covered in ice, it seems the original poster's intention may have been misunderstood." Oh boy. One commenter noted, "The original phrasing was creepy, but your explanation of what you were trying to ask seems reasonable." I don't want to spend a ton of time on this topic, but if you are interested in drinking breast milk or chest milk, if you're interested in the excretions of somebody's mammary glands, whatever, it's not a huge thing as far as I'm concerned. I do think it's weird because adults don't really need breast milk, but a lot of adults are saying to themselves these days, "Well, gee, Dan, what's wrong with having, you know, a little baby's blood?" I heard these really big, important, famous people are taking themselves and getting IVs of baby's blood, and it's rejuvenating them. In fact, they're going to come out with a product next year which will be harvested baby's blood, and they're going to call it Rejuvenex, and they're going to sell a drink at Starbucks, and you can get yourself a shot. We have become, in many ways, like vampires, feeding on the young. It's as if the problem of death became more than just an issue or problem. It became this fascination of fear. And for an entire generation or two, they're so fucking afraid of dying that they'll do horrible fucking things. Like drink, you know, breast milk. I don't know if that helps or not, but they might do that. They might get themselves a little bit of that baby's blood. And if they ever find themselves an unconscious drunk hobo at the bar, just take them back to your place and get a few new kidneys. But you better watch out, buddy. You don't know where I've been. You want my breast milk? You want my kidney? Yeah, you want my kidney. You want my breast milk. Oh, boy. No, I don't know. It's one of those, it's like you say to yourself, where is the line? And I don't mean for people wanting to blow up Palestinians or Israelis. I don't want to talk about magical paragliders. If you're obsessed with the recent war du jour, we're at war with East Asia this week. We were at war with Eurasia last week. Next week, we'll be at war with East Asia again. It's that thing that has kept me up at night since early 2020. And it's not just about the military psychological warfare. It's not just that 2020 has become folklore for a lot of people like 9/11, and that should tell you something about the truthiness of what happened. Because sometimes folklore is based on the truth. Sometimes it's based upon people's desire to hide what actually did occur. And I think about that, and I think about this story. It's silly, breast milk. What's the big deal? But it makes me kind of wonder, are we just a bunch of frickin' vampires? Have we reached a point where we are simply treating human life like some type of garbage, and we can simply reprocess it and have our, we can have our cake and eat it too, Dan, as long as it's made of babies? Then you won't have to eat the crickets, Dan. How long until homeless people are told, we'll give you a few months of just amazing joy if you pass a series of medical tests. We'll give you a few months of like a hotel room, and you know, you can't really drink, and we're not going to let you do anything crazy like cocaine, but we'll probably get you a hooker. But after a couple months, Mr. and Mrs. Homeless People, to include your kids, we're going to take what we need. And you can say, well, Dan, that's never going to happen. That could never happen. I don't think it will happen because I think the system is near collapse. So, yeah, I agree. It will never happen. But if this crooked system keeps beating along, it could very well happen. And all your voting, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Communist Party, go beat bricks. All your voting will make no difference. It will happen. What's happening in Canada will happen here. And a day will come where you'll say to your doctor, I'm depressed, and they will give you the option. They'll give you a handout with a headline saying, depression in you and your organs. So you don't want to live. That'll be the headline. So you don't want to live, ? So you don't want to live. Next topic, Mr. Scrumbo. So Salma Hayek is coming out with a new movie. Salma Hayek is coming out with a new movie. I think she's in her 50s, maybe she's 60. The point is, she's about, you know, 6 years older than me, so she's almost 60. But she looks pretty good, doesn't she? She looks like she takes the Grecian formula. Salma Hayek is coming out with a new movie. It's really sexy. She's going to take it up the rear from Magic Mike. There will be scenes of bondage and jerk chicken and squab grease rubbed all over the nads and the boobula. She'll be wearing a strap-on made of roughly hewn cedar and burlap and coarse rope. Watch out, Magic Mike. Her screen name is Deluxe Interior. And Magic Mike is just, you know, Magic Mike. There'll be a scene in the middle of the movie when Matthew McConaughey comes struggling into the bedroom, wrestling a robot anaconda and complaining about butt sores and Fukushima-style crabs. It's supposed to be a big movie, an Oscar winner, probably is going to win 3 Oscars. Perhaps the crowning achievement of Salma's career, from what some say. Matt's character, Dwayne Rebar, has a kind of platonic dialogue with Salma about vaginal dryness and the blue pill. Of course, the secret guest star is Taylor Swift. Taylor's character is named Cheese Ramen. And she smells like cat pee and slaughtered pigs. Taylor and Matt go at it after Matt's character injects himself with concentrated rod stiffener, but it's too much and he almost has a stroke. While blowing his load into Taylor's ass, of course, Taylor quivers as Matt looks stoically into the distance towards the cabinet where he stashed his coke. It all goes south when Dwayne proposes a California taco, quote-unquote, but Salma's character's like, I'm in the mood for an Eskimo pie. At one point in the film, Sylvester Stallone shows up. Sly plays Drexler Harley, the evil metal-style biker, this dude who owns all the flesh trade. on Sunset Boulevard. Drexler pulls Taylor off Matt, while Salma allows both Matt and Magic Mike to perform a quote-unquote West Side-style chili cook-off on her, which in Ohio is called a double salamander barbecue. It gets weird in this new movie. At about the 90-minute mark, when you think the film is almost over, then stuff gets very hot. Salma's character lay on her bed, exhausted and covered in sweat and spliz. She's taken too much and needs a break, but Drexler convinces the others, to include Taylor, to set Salma up for a quote-unquote Tennessee slideshow. A very dangerous maneuver for anyone over 50, spoiler alert. Their bodies are stretched and contorted. Drexler lets out a hideous scream. Taylor's character is covered in torg pudding and bleacher wax. It all gets worse as the orgiastic pyramid is slathered with whipped cream and raccoon spice. Cortan raiders arrive to shove cucumbers and zucchini up the butts of Magic Mike and Salma. Salma's tied to the bed, and marbles are placed in her butthole. She writhes in agony and pleasure as Drexler declares himself train engineer. And Drexler starts lining up the players. Taylor first with her double eagle butt scratcher is a special kind of strap-on. And Salma moans heroically as her thighs tighten and she bites her bottom lip. Near the end of the movie, as the players put on their clothes and apply Bengay, Salma walks with dignity towards a sliding glass door. She opens the door and stands outside, looking at a nuclear reactor melting down in the distance. And here's a quote from the end of the movie. Salma says, "We were the dark selves. Our juices are raw. We were the dark selves. Our greases flowed amply. We opened up the world like it was a hidden valley. And now the fluid flows. And now the odor grows. We are the dark selves." She comments this to Drexler, but Drexler's having a stroke because he smells toast. Matt's character is passed out on the bathroom floor, covered in vomit. Taylor Swift is snorting meth and dancing nakedly near the coffee table. And Magic Mike, he has crabs now. That's right, Magic Mike, you got crabs from one night in the cooch. Because they all learned a lesson about love. The tenderness of love, the touching and the feeling, the scratching and the noises, the special kinds of sounds you make when you're feeling good. It's love. It's love, baby. If you listen to this podcast and you enjoy it, that's great. Sorry about the noise of the heater. I can't do anything about it. I'm currently doing the podcast where I work because it's the only thing that's working right now. The camper's not really working. It's not really doing it for me. Would I love to figure out a way to turn off the heater? I don't know. Hopefully I can find out today and see if I can do it. But I am sorry about the noise. But if you listen to this podcast and you enjoy it, you can donate. But before you do, listen to the following. Take care of your food, water, shelter first. Take care of people in your life that you care about first. if you're setting aside food for yourself and your family, and you have a pet, a dog or a cat, then make sure you're buying food for them too. 6 months of food for you means 6 months of food for you know, your dog. And remember, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. So before you donate to this podcast, donate to yourself. Give yourself a break. You know, things still work. Yeah, life is a little crazy. And I'm sorry to say, despite the fact that you're not going to want to hear it, it's about to get a lot crazier. And I don't know when it's going to happen. The thing about people and the slow burn, everything's a slow burn until it isn't. And when it comes to catastrophic failure in complex systems, how can I put it? It's brutal. It's discontinuous. It's nonlinear, and it doesn't care. So when it begins, it's going to be like yesterday things worked and today they don't. But things are still working right now. And so while you can still enjoy your life, while you can still take a girl out on a date or a boy or whatever, while you can still take that drive to visit your mom, you really should, baby. And you should do all this before you donate to anybody on the internet. But if you've done all these things, you've taken care of the things you need and some of the things you want, then you can donate. Donate as much or as little as you want to. Zero is fine. I say zero is fine because what am I going to say? Zero is fine because a lot of people don't have any money. Most of the people I know at my level of existence in the world I'm in, most of the normal people I've met don't have any extra money. So I am surprised at this point when I do get donations, especially if they're from new people. But a lot of people don't have any cash. So if you don't have any cash, don't worry about it. You know, just listening to the podcast is using your time. And this is the reason why I do the beg for money routine at the end. Because if you didn't get to the end, why would you pay any money at all? Out of pity? Don't pity me, baby. Don't pity me. Think about the story I read about the 16-year-old kid. Pity that kid and pity the other kids that are going to get chopped up so some old freak can go do cocaine in Cabo. Pity them, but don't pity me. It is Wednesday, hump day, October the 25th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. It's just after 7:34 a.m. here in Greenkentown, Washington, on the Olympic Peninsula. Have a great rest of your day, baby.